This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell.
Walking each other home is an exploration of the many ways we cultivate wisdom, compassion, and love in our lives. Mirabai Bush talks with some of her many diverse friends about what they're learning now from their spiritual paths and practices. If you would like to support this podcast, please visit BeHereNowNetwork.com/Mirabai.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mirabai Bush, and this is Walking Each Other Home. We're exploring the many ways in which people wake up to and express the spirit, and how each of our stories helps others wake up as we walk each other home together. Neem Karoli Baba, my teacher, said, "Sobek, the spirit is all one, but the paths to getting there are as diverse as we are." So today we have the great delight and honor of being able to talk to Dr. Linwood Hayman Jr., who is an associate professor of behavioral health science in the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State and board vice president of Contemplative Mind. And I'll just say that as a practitioner of radical love, Len is guided by the perception that love is most effective as an offering, not an investment, as most offerings come with no expectation for repayment. To those of you who have read a lot of Ram Dass, I think, would call this unconditional love. And Len is a teacher, professor, a researcher, and an activist of radical love. So we're just going to talk about it. And so, hi, Len.
Hey, Mirabai, how are you?
As I think you know, my teacher gave me two instructions: love everyone and serve everyone. And that's what I've been trying to do all these years, in so many different settings and ways. Mm. When I first heard you talk about love and public health, when you were still teaching at University of Michigan at Flint, I thought it was bold and wild to be talking about love when you couldn't drink the water. You know, I knew you had an understanding of love that was beyond a first take. So let's talk about what kind of love you mean, radical love, agape, or that higher love that you are dreaming of. Just whatever you want to say about it would be great.
Sure. Well, first things first, I really appreciate this opportunity to talk with you. You know, I always enjoy talking with you and getting to see your face. When I think about love, or even specifically when the type of love that I'm talking about, I think it would help folks to first consider love as a verb. Thus far, when we've talked about love, a lot of the explanations or the conceptualizations of what love is, it's spoken of as a noun, right? It's spoken of as something that is either possessed or, you know, at best given. But when I'm speaking about love, I'm talking about it as an actual verb, as an act of doing, something that one does, or something that one offers. The idea behind radical love is that it first has to start with self. The first most critical and crucial component of radical love is you as the root, right? So when I speak of radical, I mean at the very root of love, is you as the being to not only give it or offer it, but also as the being to receive it, right? And so you mentioned that I was teaching, that I was a professor out in Flint at the University of Michigan, Flint, when the water emergency began. And a lot of the sentiment from my interactions via my research with the Flint residents was that this was something that was done to them. And it was something that was not even a surprise, because it was just another aspect of oppression that they had experienced. And so when I began to really consider this idea of radical love and what it means and what it can do, it's in a lot of ways reflective of Paulo Freire's Pedagogy for the Oppressed, right, where he mentions the importance of liberation coming from the oppressed, and the oppressed being the individuals who would most effectively teach liberation. It couldn't come from the oppressors, because, you know, the oppressors had been in the system of oppressing. And so when I think of radical love, in order for an individual who has been oppressed for, you know, all of their life, it requires an understanding that I am worthy of a different experience than this. I am worthy of being free from this system of oppression. So that means not only being free from being oppressed, but also being free from being the oppressor, right? Breaking that cycle. And one of the most effective ways to do that is to begin the practice of radical love, in terms of cultivating that loving energy within the self before we can even begin to share it with, you know, other beings and other people.
So does that include, or is what you're saying, you start with love of yourself?
Yes. Yes.
And then extend to others?
That's right.
How do you do that?
What I think of love as energy, there are ways that we can leak energy, right? So energy can't be created or destroyed, it's transmitted. And so when we think of what it means to be aware of the amount of love that you have, or, you know, the lack thereof, the the first place to start is developing an awareness that this love is, it's a process, it's a practice. And if you can't, if you're having difficulty or if you're having trouble practicing it within yourself, especially like you mentioned earlier, Ram Dass's conceptualization of unconditional love, it's very difficult to practice to give or to offer unconditional love if you don't love yourself unconditionally, right? So when we have issues or when we have difficulty or challenges loving ourselves, when we enter into that process of love, there's this, you know, conscious or usually subconscious exchange that is expected to happen, where I am going to let you know in some way, shape, or form that I love you or that I care deeply for you and your well-being, right? And so in so doing, the expectation then is for you to make me feel as I believe that I am making you feel, right? And so what ends up happening is this consistent exchange of one-upsmanship, right? Where I did this for you, and in order for me to feel love from you, you have to do, you know, you have to go a little bit farther. But if we start at home, if we start with self, and we fall in love with ourselves first, then what we are then able to do is, that's when the offering of love can be made, right? That's when I could just, I'm just going to drop this love package off for you, so to say. And if you pick it up, fantastic, then you'll feel the love. If you don't pick it up, fantastic, you know, you won't feel the love, but I'm leaving it there. I love myself enough that I don't have to worry about what happens to it after I drop it off, because I'm connected to a source that keeps me full of love. And, you know, I don't think that really specifically answered your question. So let me try it this way. When I think about love as a practice, it also gives me a consideration of love as a science, right? So if I considered love and the process of the practice of falling in love as a progressive action or progressive actions, the first step is to observe, right? Just like it is in the scientific process. The scientific process of loving requires observation first. It's just paying attention. And in so doing, as I pay attention, the objective is to then lean in more, literally, actually lean in more for additional information. So the observation is initially taking place with the eyes, and I'm leaning in more so that I can see a bit more clearly. When I lean in a bit more, then I'm getting closer to allow for the a higher level of observation to take place, which is I can not only see what it is that I'm interested in or who it is that I'm interested in loving, but now I can also hear them a bit better. And as I am paying attention to this focal being, I'm also paying attention to how I am leaning into them. I'm also paying attention to how I am engaging with them, right? So if I am leaning into them, then I'm leaning in a way that will not make me or my presence become a burden to the person that I'm leaning into. So I'm not leaning on them, but I'm leaning into them for more information. That process of leaning in also is it's a dance to a certain extent, right? Because then if I'm leaning in, then the person that I'm leaning into is able to see clearly that, well, they're interested in what it is that I'm saying, what it is that I'm doing. That final lean is leaning in with the intention to feel, leaning in and allowing yourself to have such close proximity and also obtaining permission to have such close proximity that the intention is to feel what's happening with and around the focal being to whom I'm leaning, right? So there's this, when I consider love and the process of love, it's that kind of a practice, and it's a stepwise practice.
You don't have to answer this, but do you remember, as you're speaking, I'm trying to remember, you know, times when I first realized that I felt love for myself. And do you remember any early times when you felt that, when you first kind of discovered it? Or
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know the language for asking the question.
No, I love that question. That's such a fantastic question. I'm even beginning to tingle a little bit as I consider the magnitude of that question. You know, I was diagnosed in October with depression, and it came as somewhat of a surprise. But then, you know, even being a psychologist, being as though I'm not a clinical psychologist, I didn't really know a whole lot about the process of depression and how it operates. But as I was talking to my therapist and to my psychiatrist, what I ended up realizing was that there has been a malaise of depression over most of my life. And what I mean is there's always been this presence of not being good enough, or not being, just not being enough, right? Not even having to have an adjective before enough, but just not being enough. There was always this constant drive and motivation that to me felt a bit more external than internal, to be the best or to be better. And a part of me attributes that to, you know, being in this Black male body. But at the same time, some of it is attributed to, I just never had the opportunity, or I didn't have paying close attention to myself as a practice, right? I didn't have a mindfulness practice. I didn't develop a mindfulness and a meditation practice until 2015. And so it's, you know, going on 6 years that I've had this practice. And so over the last 5 or 6 years, I've been engaged in this process of slowly but surely falling head over heels in love with myself, and realizing the contributions that I have to make to this world are a gift that I can give, not that I'm expected to give. And if I don't give it, then that doesn't mean that I'm unworthy of love, or it doesn't mean that I'm unworthy or that I'm not enough. It just means that, you know, I didn't get around to giving it, so to say. But when I really gave myself permission to begin to feel this way about myself, it really opened my eyes to what I had been missing. And you have been the recipient of my love now for at least 4 years, right? And so I'm thinking about the magnitude. I'm a pretty intense guy. I don't do a whole lot of small talk. Usually when I'm engaging in conversations with people, it gets deep relatively quickly. Sometimes it freaks people out. Sometimes they see it as endearing, but my process of leaning in is intense, and it's palpable. And prior to, you know, say the last maybe even, 6 months, I wasn't aware of just how strong it is because I wasn't experiencing it for myself. And so what would happen previously is, I mentioned this before, I'm leaking this loving energy, meaning I'm unintentionally paying close attention to far closer attention to someone else than I am to myself. And so there was a moment last week where I'm a very musical person. I love music and I love to sing, as you know, Mirabai. So one of my favorite, I had the idea to play one of my favorite love songs, Love No Limit by Mary J. Blige. And I was, dancing around. It was in the morning before, I had to attend to my sons. And I caught myself in the mirror. And rather than shrinking away from the mirror, I walked to the mirror, approached it, and finished singing the rest of the song to myself in the mirror. And I think that was one of the most radical acts that I'd ever done for myself. I'm used to singing love songs for other people, but I'd never felt that power for myself. So that's one of the recent examples of, feeling self-love.
That is great. That is a great practice. I've never done it. I'm going to do it. That's so cool. Because I'm sure you see everything that arises, as you know, and you see it twice because you see it in your mind and you see it in the mirror. That's right. It's good. Wow. That's fabulous. I often, in my quest to love everyone at all times, have difficulty with certain people. Not many people in my personal life, but I have just been watched the entire proceedings around the impeachment, and there were a lot of people there who were hard to love. And so what do you do when since you have this commitment too, what do you do when that arises? Are there people or images, I don't know, that or music that inspire you, so kind of get you back, remind you that what you really want to be in a place of love? I know that Martin Luther King said that, I'm not asking you to like everybody, but I am asking you to love everybody. And that's helped me a lot of times. But what do you turn to?
That's it. I speak of how amazing you are frequently, but that's another fantastic question. So I do love music and I love to sing. And in terms of what I turn to, being as though love is now a practice, love is also a lens of mine. And I want to be very clear in what I mean when I'm talking about love. Like, again, I know that there are several conceptualizations and operationalizations of what love is. But for me, in this instance, when I'm talking about love, I mean doing what I can to increase the health of whoever it is that I'm professing or offering my love to, right? So in a lot of ways, I don't have the privilege, I don't have the access to engage in that lean in, if you will, that I described earlier, that process of love. But what I can do is I can say, you know what, as much as this person makes my skin crawl, and as much as this individual or this group of people frustrates me, I can wish them well. I can wish them health. I can wish them peace. I can wish them spaciousness. And that's the best I can do, right? That's, and I can leave it at that. I don't have to continue to pay attention to the negative, you know, horrible, traumatizing things that they do. But every time I do have the chance to see these negative behaviors and that they're engaging in, the negative things that they're saying, that's a reminder to me to restate that wish. I wish them well. I wish them health. I wish them peace, because if it's, to me, it's very clear that they don't have it, that they don't have well-being, that they don't have peace, that they're not healthy, because if they were, then there wouldn't be such a compulsion to have power over this group of people, or power over or control over. They wouldn't need it, right? It would just be, that's fantastic. You're being the way that you are. If there's any way that I can help you be even better at what you're doing, then I would like to engage in beloved community with you so that we can become interdependent upon each other, and we can help each other rather than competing with each other. So it isn't a specific song at this point anymore, but it's really just the lyrics of life that I'm paying attention to now. And my constant refrain is love. It's love. It's, I don't have to get caught up in that narrative of negativity. I can wish them health, well-being, and peace, and keep it moving.
That's real good. Well, since you mentioned the beloved community, I know you once said to find this love, I go home. And since this is about walking each other home, would you say more about that? I know it connects to beloved community.
Yeah.
Home.
You know, home for me, it's been challenging, especially as an adult, and especially once I became a father. It's been very challenging to feel at home here in the United States, just being completely transparent. It's been, to me, home is not a place where Gil Scott Heron sang of it back in the late 60s. And he says home is where the hatred is. And so he, you know, in speaking about home and speaking about the United States as home, that home to me is sanctuary. Home to me is replenishment, or a place for replenishment. Home to me is peace. Home to me is acceptance. It's a contained, or a container for my liberation, right? It's a container for my freedom. And so when I was away from home for 17 years, when I was living in Michigan, those 17 years, I always enjoyed coming home to Maryland, but to be completely honest, it's always been challenging coming all the way home to Maryland, just because of some of the difficult experiences that I've had here. But I'll tell you, my partner is from Puerto Rico, and she, whenever she and I and our family have an opportunity to go down there, I always feel at home. And one of the most significant reasons, or one of the strongest contributing factors to that, is phenotypic characteristics aren't as big of a deal, right? How you look isn't as big of a deal. We're human beings, so it's a big deal, but at the very least, the pigment of your skin isn't a determinant for how I'm going to treat you or interact with you. So whenever my wife and I, you know, go to Puerto Rico, or even before we were married and I would go to Puerto Rico, it would feel like home. It would feel like sanctuary. And this was even before I could speak Spanish. It would feel like liberation. And yes, there were limitations, but now when I think of home, it's less about it being a specific place, and it's more about it being a conceptualization. I feel as though home is a process as well now. Home is a practice. It's a, if I can feel at home in my body, if I can feel at home in my soul and in my spirit, then I can feel at home wherever I am. And, you know, that process of radical love, starting with self-love, is the key to unlocking that door of, you know, wherever I am, because of how insulated by love I am personally, then wherever I am is home, because I feel at home within myself. I feel at home within my very being.
That's great. That reminds me, my mother, who's been dead for a long time now, but her favorite phrase was, home is where the heart is. And we had had, you know, growing up, had some trauma. My father left. We got poor. She had to keep moving us around, you know, and that's losing your physical home can be hard. And so she would always tell us, home is where the heart is. And I think that's what we're saying, that home is in love.
Yes.
In the other thing I have to share with you, I could do this offline, but I'm going to tell you now. I did this conversation recently with John Densmore. I think I told you. And so he's a drummer. And so we were talking about music and spirituality and so on. And I asked him basically, like, why is percussion so important? And he said, you know, it's the first sound you hear while you're still in the womb. Mm-hmm. You're hearing your mother's heartbeat. And then when your own heartbeat comes in, then you're playing together. I really love that. But he said, yeah, that's the beginning. That's where you feel really safe. And then he said, it's the ultimate homeland security. I thought that was really good.
That's great. I love that.
So, yeah.
You know, that yeah. The idea of walking each other home is so moving, and it's, you know, no pun intended. It's so remarkable, primarily because if we allow ourselves to see love as home, then we can facilitate the process of love for each other. So when I speak of this, the importance of interdependence, it means that I am no more or less reliant on you than you are of me. And if we're walking each other home, and home is where the heart is, then when we enter into community with each other, that is a process in and of itself of us walking each other home. It's one of the things that you do for me is you, whenever we get the privilege to talk, you always remind me of how much you appreciate me. You remind me of how much you love me. That's walking me home, because, you know, you are a person that I don't, you know, especially now with COVID, I don't get to see you as often as I would like to, but whenever I do, I always feel at peace around you. And so that aspect of peace is, it's oh yeah, I'm on the sidewalk now in our beloved community, and we're walking each other home, and we're just walking around at home with each other, because we have this freedom to love each other and to care for each other and to really mean it, not to say, oh, I love you or I love you, you know, but the, you know, I really do care about your well-being. I really do care about your health. I really do care about, you know, your success. And I feel that, you know, I feel the same thing from you for me.
Absolutely. Let's see. Say a little bit about the connection between love, which seems very personal, and seems, well, that, and public health. I mean, here we are in the middle of the worst public health crisis for 100 years in this country. Although I remember soon after COVID started, you did say, and someone was saying, and we're also vulnerable now. And you said, some people have been vulnerable before COVID arrived, you know, which I thought was really important. And, but it does, you know, there is this, you know, sharing of vulnerability, but how will love take us to a place where, you know, where we have public, good public health in all its aspects for all beings?
Oh, I love that question too, Mirabai. So if we continue this line of thinking of radical love and starting with self first, the foundation of radical love is being able to love oneself so much that we can offer love and not invest love. If we think about that from a public health perspective, to me, what that means is, first things first, again, if I'm telling you that I love you, it means that I care very much for your health and well-being. And so if I am in community with you, or even if, you know, I might know you only through, you know, long distance wise, I might not have the opportunity to, you know, to actually share space with you. If I come into the habit or develop a practice of wishing wellness, wishing health, wishing success for you, what it does is it decreases my intention to compete with you. And in so doing, it decreases my motivation to hoard whatever resources I have from you. Because if I am healthy, then that means that I am secure in who I am and what I have. And if I care about your health and your well-being, then that means that hoarding is not an act of love. Not sharing resources is not an act of love. And so if I were then of the mindset that, you know, if I am surrounded by people who care about me and not people who are trying to compete with me, then I'm healthier mentally, right? I'm less stressed environmentally. And this is, you know, this is color irrelevant. This is race and ethnicity irrelevant, gender irrelevant. Any of the social categories irrelevant. If I don't feel like I have to compete with you for access to health, right? If I don't feel like I have to compete with you for safety, if I don't feel like I have to compete with you for well-being, what that means is we can pursue well-being, and not only can we pursue it, but we can work together towards it. And so if we consider that as a public health model, what that means is there is a higher likelihood of public health, because everyone is getting what they need in an equitable way rather than an equal way. Meaning, I don't mind you getting a little bit more than me because I have most of what I need, if not all of what I need, right? And so if it came time for there to be cutbacks to me receiving something so that you would be able to receive, you know, proportionately more, so that way your health can be increased and your well-being can be increased. If I love you, why would I mind that? If I care about your health and well-being, why would I fear that, right? It wouldn't be, you know, oftentimes the argument or the evidence that extreme capitalists give is, well, I'm trying to ensure the future of my lineage. I'm trying to ensure the future of my, my offspring, my grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera. But what we've been able to observe, you know, over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years specifically, maybe even the last 20, is that this every being for themselves approach is contributing to excess suffering that is really being inflicted on the planet right now, right? And so if I am engaging in this hoarder mentality where I am, you know, I'm aware of the dwindling resources and I'm all about trying to collect as much of those resources as I can for the well-being of, you know, my kin, my people, it's coming at the detriment of the physical environment. And if the physical environment breaks down, well, where are your kin and your people going to live with all of these resources that you've hoarded, right? That everyone, all of us live on this same planet right now. And so if I cared more about your welfare, then I would be more in favor of equity than I would equality, because then I would have the wherewithal to understand that I have a lot more of what I need than does this group of people or does this person, my neighbor, for example. And so if it came time for there to be adjustments, if I had to pay more taxes, then so be it. I'm willing to do that because my welfare is tied to their welfare. So right now it's all, when I'm thinking of this, when I'm thinking of love as a public health initiative, when I'm thinking of radical love as a public health initiative, when I'm thinking of the beloved community as a public health initiative, what I'm talking about is each of us taking more responsibility for each other's health rather than us deciding that, you know, this person or this group of people is where they are because of their own doing. And if they can't pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, or if they can't do you know, what it is that I did in order to, you know, find success in this country or in this world, then that's not on me. That's because they're not working hard enough. But what that also does is it creates this feeling or this notion of competition that if you, as someone who does not have as much as I have, come into my neighborhood, then that means that I have to be afraid of you at some point taking something from me. Whereas if we really become neighbors within the beloved community, then that means that I don't have to worry about you taking anything from me, because you will come to know that I am a giving enough person that I want you to be well, and I want you to be healthy, and I don't have to, you know, be afraid of you taking anything from me.
That is really beautiful. I mean, You took something that sounds so bureaucratic, public health administration. And I know, of course, it's not from all those years I worked with Save a Foundation, but still, and just, that's the thing, we bring it back to what we know in the heart, then it all makes sense. That's wonderful. Do you want to lead a practice? We still have 10 minutes or so.
But we don't, I would have love to, that.
Just a, whatever you want to do with the last 10, we can do.
I was trying to find, there is a practice that I have that I would like to guide us through. And it's a series of affirmations. And there, the focus and the goal, the intention behind the affirmations is to really give us the opportunity to consider our worthiness and our importance to each other. At the very least, what we can do is wish no more for, what we wish for ourselves, we can wish for others. That's the essential goal and intention behind this. Let me pull it up. And I'm going to, you know, I know how horrible it is to have dead space on a recording. So I'm just going to ramble until I find it. And I found it. So so again, these are.
Laughing is good, too.
Yes, it is. So these are just a few affirmations. And what I'm going to do is invite us, those of us who are engaged with each other right now, regardless of what time we're listening to this, when and where we're listening to this. I want to invite you to settle in to where you're seated. And I want to invite you to allow your shoulders to just fall away from your ears. If you're sitting down, pay attention to the areas that you might feel tensed right now. If you've already closed your eyes, do you just have them shut, or are you squeezing them shut? Do you have your brow furrowed? If your mouth is closed, Are you pressing your tongue against the top of your mouth, or is it resting gently in the bottom? Are your teeth clenched, or is your jaw a little slack? Your hands, are they balled up? Are they pressing into each other? Or are they resting in your lap, on your thighs? Your feet, are your toes balled up? Are you pushing into the ground or into the floor? Can you give yourself permission to just be a little lighter? Can you give yourself permission to just sit a bit more gently? And for those of us who feel comfortable enough to close our eyes, I would invite you to do so now. And as you do, I invite you to just take a nice, deep cleansing breath. And before you breathe in, push that stale air that you might be holding out of your stomach. Just squeeze your stomach tight. And then breathe in as deeply as you can. And let that go. Feel yourself sitting even a bit more gently right now. And with this nice, gentle, relaxed sit, I'm going to read a few affirmations for us to say to ourselves. If you're so moved, you can say them out loud. But after I say each affirmation, I'm going to ring my singing bowl, and that singing bowl is going to vibrate that affirmation into our being. May I be all I need to be and have all I need to have in order to do all I need to do to make this world a more loving and just place. May you be all you need to be and have all you need to have in order to do all that you need to do to make this world a more loving and just place. May we be all that we need to be and have all that we need to have in order to do all that we need to do to make this world a more loving and just place. And as the singing bowl, the vibrations of the singing bowl pass, my wish and my hope is that these vibrations that we have shared with each other, that they'll stay with you. My wish is that this energy that we are sharing across time and space, that they will stay with you. And to seal off this practice, I invite you to take one more nice and deep cleansing breath, first squeezing the air out and then breathing in deeply. Hold it for a few seconds and then release. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. It was wonderful. So simple and so.
My pleasure, my love.
So, see you in the air, in the ethers.
Yes, ma'am.
Yep. Now we are recorded for all time.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.